When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello, welcome to Emotional Badass, where Moxie meets Mindful. I'm your host, life coach and psychotherapist, Nikki Eisenhower. And on today's show, I'm sitting down with Dr. Camilo Ortiz, where we discuss child psychology, parenting fears, and independence.
The data clearly show this. When we just look at how much time parents spend with their kids, that number has just continued to go up. And so we know that when parents are around their kids, they tend to step in and quote unquote help their children when they experience what I call the four D's, which are discomfort, distress, disappointment, and danger. And so I see kids having just less practice over time with, for example, being disappointed without someone needing to fix it. And so I am very worried that well-meaning parents are helping and stepping in and actually creating a bigger problem by depriving kids of those skills that they need to develop on their own.
So am I hearing you say that with the best of intentions, parents are actually accidentally impeding the development of their own children?
You said it better than I did. Absolutely. And I want to just make sure that this does not come off as judgmental, because I know.
Dr. Camilo Ortiz is a PhD. He is an associate professor of psychology and director of clinical training in the Department of Psychology at Long Island University. Dr. Ortiz's latest work involves developing an innovative new treatment for child anxiety that focuses on strengthening resilience and self-efficacy by vastly increasing child independence. On to the show. Thank you so much for being here with me, Camilo. I am here with Dr. Camilo Ortiz, and we are about to have a fantastic conversation about mental health. Thank you for coming on Emotional Badass.
I'm so looking forward to it.
So I met you through my interview of Lenora Skenazy, and you work with Let Grow. What are your specialties?
My main specialty is parenting in general. And for a while, I did a lot of work on disruptive behavior in kids and what was the kind of parenting that contributed to disruptive behavior. And then how could we use parenting to treat children who had high levels of aggression and noncompliance? And I still do a lot of that. But as many people have noticed, we've seen vastly increasing rates of child anxiety. And so I became curious in why that was happening from a parenting perspective. And I started to study helicopter parenting and intrusive parenting and over-involved parenting. And I noticed that my field wasn't really addressing the issue well enough. And I thought that there was something I could add to the conversation. And so I basically developed a new treatment for child anxiety that is based on what I call mega doses of child independence, which is really different than how most people in my field treat child anxiety, which is to have kids in therapy for a long time. But I think that there's a lot, even though that works for many kids, there's a lot of stuff that kids can do on their own. And in fact, when we involve in adults, I think we actually water down a lot of the benefits that kids can realize on their own.
I'm excited to get into this with you. When I look out into the world, I see anxiety and depression just growing massively. And we're 20 years in. I've been a therapist for almost 20 years, to having Oprah on TV, to having therapeutic terms, you know, in the common vernacular, therapy books, self-development, everything you could possibly sort of imagine in the field of mental health at our fingertips more than ever before. And yet the population seems sicker than ever before. So what do you see when you look out at the world? What do you think is causing that?
Well, as I told my doctoral students this morning, if information was enough to help someone with mental illness, we would not have a job. And so it is really not enough to provide people with information about what's going on. And there's some evidence that in some situations, providing them with a never-ending stream of information about emotions and dysregulation and anxiety and depression can actually sensitize them to normal feelings and make them think that they're pathological. But that's a whole separate discussion, I think. When I look at the more societal trends, I see, and the data clearly show this, when we just look at how much time parents spend with their kids, that number has just continued to go up unabated. And so we know that when parents are around their kids, they tend to step in and quote unquote help their children when they experience what I call the four D's, which are discomfort, distress, disappointment, and danger. And there are certainly reasonable times to do that. But from a psychological perspective, I see a lot of parents depriving kids of the opportunity to tolerate and handle these four D's. And so I see kids having just less practice over time with, for example, being disappointed without someone needing to fix it. And so I am very worried that well-meaning parents are helping and stepping in and actually creating a bigger problem by depriving kids of those skills that they need to develop on their own. You know, handling these four D's is probably one good way to think about what development is all about, what differentiates an adult from a child. Mm-hmm. And it's being able to delay gratification and handle difficult emotions. And if someone is always stepping in to help you in these moments, I think you don't develop those skills well at all.
So am I hearing you say that with the best of intentions, parents are actually accidentally impeding the development of their own children?
You said it better than I did. Absolutely. and I want to just make sure that this does not come off as judgmental, because I know that parents have an impossible job and they are doing their best. But I think there's actually a Goldilocks scenario here where parents do far less than what they're doing now, mm-hmm. and they actually get better outcomes.
That sounds golden and lovely for parent and child. One of the things that has really shook me to my core as a professional, but also just as a human being, is doing this long enough to have people that are in their 20s now, mid to late 20s, tell me, I don't know who I am because I've been medicated since I was 8. And when I see them and evaluate them and start working with them, a deep down truth is that I don't think anything was ever wrong with them in terms of mental health at all. Sometimes those kids are mouthy. Sometimes they're really smart. They have a lot of questions that make parents uncomfortable. I'm thinking of someone I love very much who I think was a very disruptive kid, who didn't understand some of the maybe social delicacies about being in a classroom and not interrupting the teacher, and absolutely medicated to the nth degree. What do you think has happened in our field that we are so glorifying comfort? We are so glorifying children. Maybe this is a little unfair, but almost being sheep-like. And if they're not, then they have mental problems. Why do you think we've gone in this direction?
Well, I remember being a first-year doctoral student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and I was blown away by a study that I read that was looking into what were the best predictors of whether children were referred to special education. And it was not their problems or symptoms. It was how annoying their problems or symptoms were to adults. And so many years ago, I started wondering about this and whether we were sort of heading in this direction where adults were kind of losing their tolerance for normal development in kids and needed them all to be a certain way. And there's probably lots of societal reasons why that's the case. But I do think we pathologize a lot of normal behavior or even behavior that is different from the average, but that serves an important purpose. Mm-hmm. And so, I've sort of gotten into evolutionary psychology and what are the functions of a lot of behaviors that we might consider problematic now. But, you know, so if we look at ADHD, for example, no question in my mind that some children are highly inattentive and that interferes with their lives. But if we look at it from what has been called a mismatch hypothesis, that it's not that there's anything inherently wrong with the kid, but that there is a mismatch with the demands of society, which are, you know, change at a lightning rate, whereas our biology does not. That already can change our perspective on some of these things. And I think what it has done for me is view a lot of behaviors not as pathological, but as just not a good match for the modern day environment. And so that tends to lead to less blame and less judgment of these kids, and maybe some outside the box thinking about how to treat them, which can involve sometimes independence as a treatment.
What scares parents about giving their kids independence? Because that's the kicker, right? Is fear. Yeah. So really we're talking about how do we treat the fear in parents to not impede that natural development.
What do we do when parents are afraid to increase independence in their kids? The first thing is to validate it, which, you know, makes a ton of sense. It would be strange if it wasn't uncomfortable at all for you to vastly increase independence. But I do a pretty simple thing, which is I just ask parents what their fondest memories were when they were kids. And about 100% of them will tell me something involving no adults around. And this is what my friends and I did, and we discovered this, and this thing went wrong, but we figured it out. And then I said, wonderful. And what did that do for you? Well, it made me resilient and it made me creative. Amazing. And so do your kids get that experience? Oh, no, absolutely not. We could never allow that. And then I don't argue. I just sit in that for a minute with them. Mm-hmm. And they usually smile and say something like, huh, that's interesting. And then we talk about, like, what are the real barriers to letting kids do more independent activities? And it's usually a risk of injury or something like that. And we can talk those through. And, you know, that's what a good cognitive behavioral therapist will do, is figure out what's a barrier to any behavior and brainstorm some ideas. And we can almost always come up with at least some baby steps that parents are willing to try out and that kids want to do, because this is one of the, I think, nice things about my treatment, is that we're not forcing kids to do anything. I basically ask them, what are some things you'd like to do independently? We make a list, we check with parents about whether they're okay. Mm-hmm. And then every day we try to do one. And then we analyze how it went. Pretty simple treatment.
Tell me some of the things that wind up on those lists for independence, because we're not talking about, like, dropping a kid off at the racetrack, right? Like, we are we are talking about.
I would be okay with that, actually. So, I mean, some of them involve danger. And so, you know, not all of them, but, you know, I've had kids make a bonfire in their backyards. Kids love to whittle with a knife. Mm-hmm. I've had kids make a meal from start to finish, which involves working with an oven or a stovetop. So they don't all need to involve danger, but this is, you know, one good example of what's happening to kids now, is that they don't have experience with how to assess and handle danger. because parents step in anytime there's any danger. And so this actually makes them less able to handle danger in the long run. And it makes it more dangerous when kids don't have experience with danger. So a big part of independence, and in part it's because kids kind of like doing this stuff, is to allow some things that do have some risk, but not all of them do. And so we have kids do things like paint the wall in their room, or ride a bike to the park and climb a tree, because we noticed that they actually keep data on this. The percentage of kids who say they have climbed a tree in the last month has plummeted in the past 10 years.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
So in some ways, you know, like a lot of the stuff that we consider independence activities, people say, like, what do you mean? That's what we did every day when we were kids. But today, they're an independence activity. So I really like cooking, or I like going to a supermarket without a parent. And this is like we're talking about parents are nowhere to be found, with a shopping list and some money, and buying everything you need for a meal. Or like a little girl in our first study did, she took the bus to school. She was 9 years old in Brooklyn by herself, and she actually got lost. And so this is, you know, for some people might be the nightmare scenario, but secretly, I kind of like it when things don't go perfectly, because what did she do? There was a lady next to her. She kind of looked confused. The lady said, "So anything wrong? Can I help you?" And she said, "I think I missed my stop." The lady said, "Oh, yes, you get off here and just walk one block back." She did it, and actually was even more proud of herself than if it had just been easy and she got off the bus and walked right into school. I love these moments where kids are stretched a little bit to problem solve, because that's where we see the really important change in kids.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Well, this is what grows self-worth, self-esteem. And this is life. Like, it's pretty fascinating that we've gotten away from the reality that to be alive is to be in risk. It is risky to be alive pretty constantly. Like, even with us sitting in these chairs right now, like, something could fall out of the sky. The idea that we could raise children without them experiencing any of that risk, that's the great anxiety creator, is it not?
Absolutely. And I think sometimes we get stuck on physical risk, so there's emotional risk. So the fact that I'm here with you, I might say something stupid that people are going to ask me about forever. I'm taking a risk talking to you. And so, you know, this is maybe the area where parents step in even more quickly than for physical risk, which is, what if my child gets upset? What if they make a mistake? And as you said, this is where we grow. We need to make mistakes in order to adjust our behavior. And, you know, when an adult steps in, they deprive kids of these opportunities. And I know that they're thinking that they're doing their kids a favor, but they're actually depriving kids of an important opportunity. There's this is the
muscle building of self-worth and self-esteem.
That's right.
And you gave the example earlier. I often tell people, it's like we're doing with information as we would with our muscles. It's like, you can't read books about growing your muscles and go stare in the mirror and go, "Wow, what's going on with my muscles?" It's like, you have to do the heavy lifting, and our kids have to do some heavy lifting. They have to be scared sometimes and get to the other side of that. That's how they know that they can handle things. And that's what reduces anxiety.
And there are a million ways that parents can do this with their kids. And I give this example a lot, where I was at some gathering and there was a little girl, she must have been about two, and she was trying to pull off her sweater and she kind of got stuck in the neck of the sweater and she's struggling a little bit. And I saw a parent run over to pull the sweater off. And nobody else would have noticed anything other than a child psychologist. Mm-hmm. But for me, that's a little mini example where if we had just waited a couple of seconds, I think the child could have pulled the sweater off and she would have learned something, not life-changing, but important enough that if I get stuck and I persist a little bit on my own, I can figure it out. And there are probably 100 of these per day that parents often step into and again, deprive a child of these opportunities.
That's a very important point, because I know a lot of my listeners struggle with perfectionism and they will hear what you're saying and go, uh-oh, I took my sweater off, my three-year-old, I took that sweater off a couple of days ago. Y'all, it really is in the pattern of this. When you're attending to your child 100 times a day in this way, it's that pattern. And I'll go this far, which on its face sounds quite ridiculous. But if you look a little deeper, I think it'll resonate. It's in those moments that that child may learn, I need someone to save me, even from a sweater. I am such a staunch opponent of victim mentality that has grown in this country, and how victim mentality is associated with anxiety and depression. And it really isn't in these big traumas. Like I talk publicly on the show about I was sexually abused as a child. It is less of those big giant traumas. Yes, those have an impact, but it really isn't in more of the ways that we accidentally rob somebody from growing into their own confidence. And it's in the culmination of a billion sweater moments that shape someone. So learning as a parent to be able to see that moment and instead of feel that impulse to help that child with that sweater, to be able to sit inside of yourself and do nothing and say for yourself, my kid's got this. My kid's got this. There is no chance that my kid dies in a sweater. This is totally safe. I've got this. Sit on your hands, bite your lip, bite your tongue, so that you can experience watching your child glow. To me, when I see a child that does something for the first time that they previously thought they couldn't do, to me, that is like the glory of all the energy of the universe right there in that child. And it's not in these big giant moments when you graduate high school so much. It's in these moments. I did it with a child a couple of weeks ago, one of my friend's kids, where they're working, she's 10, on getting a little bit more independence. And we were at a restaurant. Here comes the waitress. And my friend was about to order for her. And I didn't catch it. My husband did. And he went, wait a minute. You want a cell phone, but you can't order your own food. You've got this. You can do this. And she was like, no, daddy, do it for me. She went full baby mode. Mm. And then her dad went, no, you can do it. And when she asked, she fumbled a little bit, but she found the courage. She found the fortitude, and the ray of sunshine that beamed out of her after that waitress walked away. That is what grows someone's self-worth and self-esteem.
Beautiful example. And this is the flip side of risk. So when we think about the risk of independence, we think about things going wrong, and that's reasonable and that makes sense. We don't often think about the risk of not allowing a moment like that. Mm-hmm. And those risks are less apparent, but over time, as you said, they build up, and we might end up with a child who feels like they don't have an internal locus of control. But here's the good news. Even if you have ordered for your kid every single meal of their life, it's never too late to start. And I work with parents of 17-year-olds and even mid-20s who are still stepping in to do all of these things. And it's not too late to adjust these behaviors. And often what we do, again, is what you said, is we don't actually change the parental response. We just delay it. So I ask parents to count to five Mississippi in their head and then do whatever you were going to do. So it still feels like it's pretty much the same. We're just delaying a little bit. And often in those five Mississippis, the kid figures that out on their own. And then parents learn a really important lesson.
Do you ever pitch it to the parents that you're actually helping the parents with their own anxiety about letting their kids?
Yes. So I'm right now writing a chapter in a book about this issue. And one of the things that I'm talking about are the benefits for parents of being sort of more lazy, to use it in the best possible mm-hmm. word, and not stepping in. And, you know, parents are telling me all the time now that their kids can stay home alone and that they're starting to go on dates again, or they planned a vacation without the kids. And I think this is wonderful. It's great for marriages and it's good for kids to see your parents having their own lives and going off and doing something important. It's a fundamental lesson that while you are important to them, you are not the only thing that is important to them. And I yes. love when parents start doing more stuff on their own.
I think there's so many implications. And I think in 5 and 10 years, we're going to look back and have a lot of studies about what's going on right now. We also suspect, I believe it's been proven, we kind of know, that we're growing narcissism. This relates because narcissism is about thinking the whole entire world revolves around you. Well, if the parent stops everything that they're doing 100 times a day to go help with a sweater, that is what psychologically gives that child this impression of, I just stick my hands up in a sweater and someone comes and serves me. I don't even have to ask. I don't have to speak up. Just come to me. The world revolves around me. So many of my clients and people I've worked with over the years, because they are trauma survivors of the type where they come from very dysfunctional families. Sometimes that means a lot of direct active abuse at them. Sometimes that means a lot of neglect. A lot of what I'm often talking about with those parents who allow me and invite me to help me in their parenting is to not overcorrect. I find there are a lot of people who felt so neglected when they were kids, particularly smart kids, emotionally intelligent kids who had a lot of questions. Like, I know in my life that I asked emotionally intelligent questions that my parents couldn't answer. So that left me feeling really desperate and really neglected and not getting the answers that I wanted. I think a lot of parents come from that and then try to fill in all of those spaces. I'm constantly saying to parents, your child hasn't had your childhood. They're having their own childhood. I think you're trying to parent your child through your own trauma. And that's going to have some side effects because your kid didn't have that experience. You did.
Yeah, and I think it's not always trauma. It just comes from a place of abundance, and parents yes. and they want to share this abundance with their kids, both in terms of their time and their money and their energy. Mm-hmm. And so again, super well-meaning, but deprivation, temporary deprivation, is a wonderful driver of innovation and of creativity. And you know, just a specific example of that is rotating toys. So most parents have every toy out, and I love the idea of putting 5 out at a time and hiding the rest, and then you mm-hmm. rotate those 5. And there's a lot of overlap in terms of what we've been talking about, that as a child, you don't just get everything you want all the time. You feel that desire to want something that you don't have, and that can drive you, and that can teach you that you can tolerate that discomfort. And somehow we got parenting, what we consider good parenting, all mixed up with more parenting is mm-hmm. good parenting. And I my goal is to start separating these concepts, that good parenting is not necessarily more parenting.
Yeah, there's a strategic less that can be yeah. very useful for the entire family, it sounds like you're saying.
That's right.
I think what you just said really hits me in my addiction work. You know, one of my struggles in this field is that we really cannot measure or scientifically test what we prevent at all. Mm-hmm. I know that when we are helping children get independent, when we are delaying gratification, when we are not serving them into thinking they are a little narcissist, part of what we're doing is we are fortifying them against addiction. When we started the show, we talked about anxiety and depression being higher than ever. Well, so is addiction. And I very much believe that these things are related.
I've done several podcasts now where people have made this link to addiction, and I find it really interesting. And it makes so much sense to me, because part of the function of taking a substance is that it relieves one of discomfort. Mm-hmm. And there are many reasons why people abuse substances, but certainly the relief of an uncomfortable emotion, for example, or a cognition or a thought, can lead people to distract themselves with substances. And we can teach kids at a really young age that they can tolerate the four Ds, distress and discomfort and difficult emotions. And if we can do that persistently, they, I think, will get the message, and we don't have studies on this, but we'll get the message that they don't need to run to something quick and easy, like their cell phone or in extreme situations like a substance. So that's another way to think about this. We're inoculating kids against these vulnerabilities to really dangerous things like being addicted to drugs or alcohol.
That waiting a minute, that taking a pause, that delay gratification, that you only get 5 toys, not 40 right now.
Or you can have 40, but not all at once.
You get to wait, like waiting. I believe we're about the same age. I'll be 44 this year. You might be a couple years younger than me.
That's kind of you. Thank you.
We grew up looking forward to things, waiting for movies to come out. We had to wait for TV shows. Children are also living through this time of absolute instantaneous everything, which means they're missing waiting. And in that space of waiting is where we learn to tolerate the discomfort of waiting. So yeah. I do believe that is very much playing on addiction rates in this country. Never before the last 3 or 4 years have I heard more stories of people in their early 40s drinking themselves to death. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I did not hear that. Or if I did, it was some wild outlier with some bizarre story that sort of made sense. Now it's almost a norm. This is very important work that you can do. Parents out there, I hope that part of what you're hearing is that this is also about you doing less, which means more bandwidth for you, more bandwidth for your partner, more bandwidth for your hobbies. It's good for your children to see you be a full-fledged person.
At a time when change is constant and we are pulled in far too many directions, we need a way to stay present to life and to increase our ability to remain calm, think clearly, and maintain our well-being. Many studies indicate mindfulness improves our mental, emotional, and physical health. On A Mindful Moment with Teresa McKee, you can learn how to practice mindfulness and enjoy its many benefits. Tune in for guided meditations and to hear tips and advice from some of the most respected experts in the fields of mental health and mindfulness. The world truly can be a better place. It all starts with a mindful moment.
Yeah, and there are some fairly easy ways to do less. I don't think this is rocket science. And so one thing that I talk to lots of parents about is just reducing the number of commands they make to kids. And I have families come into my lab at Long Island University, and I have this one-way mirror, and I just sit behind it with a baseball clicker, and all I do is count commands. And I will often count 100 commands in 30 minutes. And we know that totally normally developing preschool age kids will not listen to about 40% of parental commands. And so if you make 100 commands, that's 40 opportunities for an escalation and a tantrum. And if you can sort of prioritize commands, I imagine this pyramid of commands where we have a few really important ones. Don't drink the bleach. Don't run out into traffic. Mm-hmm. We probably have some ones that are less, not unimportant, but less important. And so doing less, I think the simplest way to do that is to notice commands and start dropping some of those lower priority commands, or to let what I said, the world do your parenting for you. So if you find yourself making a command about it's cold outside, wear a coat, there's a natural consequence for a child not wearing the coat. Uh-huh. You don't have to do a thing, and they will learn that lesson far better than you're nagging them to wear a coat. There's lots of those situations. And so again, doing much less and getting better results.
I love that. Just reducing the amount of commands. I tell a lot of parents, don't turn yourself into Charlie Brown's teacher. When you give a child, when you give it, I mean, if you tell me 10 things in a row, I'm going to start tuning you out. It's just a natural thing to not listen the more words that you use. So parents, make your words more expensive.
I like that. I actually tell parents, I want you to imagine that each command costs you money. Ooh. And sometimes it's home with them.
Well, it does. It costs energy. So many of the people I've worked with over the years are exhausted because they are highly sensitive. They are the observers in the world. They're taking in more information in their nervous systems than the average person. If they're parenting, my goodness, are they paying attention to a lot. And so it is a cost. It's your time, it's your energy, it's your output. And if you're teaching your kid not to listen to you because you're turning into Charlie Brown's teacher, that doesn't serve anybody. Like, let's back away from that for the greater good of everyone, particularly your peace and sanity as a parent.
We literally see this, that when parents reduce commands, the likelihood that a child will listen to a command goes right up without making any other changes. Now, obviously, important commands, make those. But I see lots of commands that if they weren't made, it would still be probably fine.
What else do you want my audience to hear from you? What's going to help them parent their kids and manage their own hearts and bodies and minds?
Well, I mean, I think one big barrier to doing less and to free range parenting is pressure from schools and pressure from other parents. And so I would suggest that any parent go to the Let Grow website, and there's a ton of free materials for schools, for parents, for therapists, including my treatment manual for independence therapy. It's free on the Let Grow website. If you're a clinician, you can use it. You don't need to send me any money. And I think what's really hard is when a single parent decides that they want to make these changes, they often get pushback from their social group. And if we can get a couple of people in a group talking about these issues and trying together to make some of these small changes, then it is much easier, I think. And I realize how hard it is to push back against this societal pressure that more parenting is better parenting. And sometimes it takes a professional. Now, I see parents sort of like take a deep breath when I tell them you don't have to work this hard. So follow me on Twitter. I talk about this stuff a lot. And read the New York Times article where we talk about, Lenore and I talk about this issue. And it will give you some ammunition if anyone ever says to you, well, you let your child go to the park by themselves. How could you do that? Mm-hmm. And I have some things to say.
I will link to that article in the show notes. You were really talking about reducing the number of commands. I think we're also living through this time of great pressure, almost like a sense of pride about overscheduling your kids too.
Yes.
I very much remember a study from a few years ago. Time is losing me as I get older. I don't know if that's 5 years ago or 15 now, where they were showing children's brains lighting up similarly to PTSD because they had too much to do and too many choices and too many. Children really do need less in a lot of ways. We are overstimulating them. And then when they have bad behavior from melting down from overstimulation, we're like, uh-oh, what's going on with this child? Too many options.
And also, let's sort of like think about what happens during structured play versus free play. So, you know, if you all have memories of kind of like going out into the park and making up a game, and we say, this is out of bounds, and this is how many chances you get. No, we should have fewer chances. And so kids are now practicing these soft skills, these negotiation skills that are going to make them far more effective adults. If it's Little League or some other kind of adult-led league, what happens in these situations? They immediately call an adult over to sort of make a decision like a judge would. And again, we deprive kids of these opportunities. So mixed age free play is at the peak of types of play that are helpful for kids. So it's great to be in leagues, but make sure that your kids have the opportunity to play without adults present, and in the best scenario, with kids of different ages, because we know from a bunch of studies that the older kids get benefits in terms of leadership And the younger kids get different benefits in terms of observing how older kids act. And that helps them in innumerable ways.
That's a fantastic point. Thank you so much for making it. This is really good stuff, y'all. When we give people, children, parents, ourselves, all of us, when we give ourselves the actual tools that grow us into more confidence, more capability, our anxiety naturally goes down, y'all. So I hope that parents are taking away some support from this episode. I hope that they're taking away maybe trusting their instincts more. I find that a lot of parents feel this intuitively. They sense this. I'm seeing a lot of gentle parenting practices backfire and a lot of parents talking about that. And I just want to empower parents to also use your instincts, use your common sense. If something feels off to you, it probably is. There will always be people like me, people like Dr. Ortiz, who you can come to for help, for support, for guidance. There's so many podcasts out there now, but to never, ever, ever not trust your gut as a parent.
Totally agree with that. And when I work with parents, I encourage them to disagree with me. If anything I say doesn't sound right to them, I don't want them to do it unless they fully understand why I'm suggesting it and understand the rationale of how it might help their kids. So never, just because someone has some letters after their name, that doesn't mean that they know better about your own kids than you do.
Thank you so much for saying that. I am usually the one to say that on this show. I appreciate it so very much. Is there anything else you want to share or you want to promote?
If you're in New York and you want a therapist to espouse some of these beliefs, then we have a private practice on Long Island. You can just Google me. It's just drcamiloortiz.com and happy to help.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, but also for everything that you do. The work with Lenore has the potential, I think, to absolutely change this conversation. I am so grateful to that work and grateful to you. Thank you so much.
She's the best. Thank you.
I want to thank Dr. Ortiz for being on the show today and discussing such an important topic. You can find him on Twitter at Dr. Camilo Ortiz and check the show notes for links to his latest New York Times essay and the free independence therapy materials available to parents, teachers, and therapists. Emotional Badass is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. I am an emotional badass. You were an emotional badass. And together, we are where moxie meets mindful. Light and love, and I'll see you right here next time with a brand new episode.
Find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.